Welcome, everyone, and really glad you're here. So we'll jump right in because we only have a half hour and there's a lot to cover. The discussion tonight is about what is one of the more famous, probably, and it is fundamental prayers of the High Holidays, which is the Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King. So we're going to spend a few minutes trying to get some of the major themes that hopefully will help, especially this year, whatever tools we could have to make the High Holidays more special, wherever we're going to end up doing it, I think it would be helpful. So, all right, so I'm going to start. Let me give you the background, okay? So the background is there's a story recorded in the Talmud, which goes back approximately 2,000 years ago, which I do like to point out that in Jewish history, that's relatively recent. So it's not like the Shema, which is 3,300 years old or the things like that. It's only 2,000 years old, which is should give us pause and should remind us that we're part of a tradition that's so ancient and has contributed so much to the world over the many, many centuries that it's been here. But so it goes back to a story in the Talmud, which tells us about a famine in the land of Israel. And so when there were famines, even today, when there's a drought, when there's a bad rain season, there's a lot of angst and a lot of prayer and a lot of extra effort put in spiritually to try to help, because it makes it for difficult times. And Talmudic times, when it was totally an agricultural society, for sure, it was very difficult. And so they had a fast day. They declared a special fast day. It wasn't the regular fast day on the calendar, but they made a fast day and they gathered for extra prayers. And the leading rabbi of the generation was up there leading the services, and he did an enhanced service where he added a lot of blessings into the daily Amida, a lot of extra requests and praises, and nothing happened. And then the famous Rabbi Akiva, who was a disciple of his, got up and said a short prayer of a number of lines, all of which began with the words, Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King, asking for God's grace, asking for God's help. And as the story is recorded in the Talmud, it started raining. And so that was like, wow, this is a powerful prayer. And that became a prayer that was set aside for days that extra prayers are necessary, or extra requests, or extra, you know, desperation. Whether it's fast days like that, whether it's the High Holidays, where it's more of a spiritual intensity, that became the go-to prayer ever since then. So the question is, what is its power and what is so unique about it? And what are some of the themes that we could take home from it? So the first thing I want to point out is the very phrase itself, the refrain, if you will, Avinu Malkeinu. Right there, our Father, our King, a parent and a king. That's two ways to address God. And the putting the two of them together as the greeting, if you will, or the calling out to God, is like all prayers, it's not meant for God. Like all prayers, it's meant for us. Prayers are there to remind us of truths that we do know or should know, or we know, but as we discussed in the prayer class, we know it in our head, but we haven't taken it to our heart yet. And so we do a lot of the repetition and a lot of discussion in the prayers. A lot of it is to help remind us, not so much to remind God. He knows, and he knows what we need better than we do often. But to remind ourselves, we discussed that a lot in the prayer series, and this is no different for sure. So what is that idea that he is Avinu and he is Malkeinu? The first thing is that those are two very different relationships. The idea of a parent, in the perfect sense of what a parent is supposed to be, you know, represents it brings up feelings of closeness and connection and love. And king, our king, is a very different emotion, a very different relationship, which is awe and respect and royalty. It's just a very different emotion. So the question is, which one is God? Is he Avinu or is he Malkeinu? And the answer is, yeah, the answer is it's both. And the power of prayer comes from somehow balancing these two, recognizing that on one hand, he is a loving Father who wants nothing more than to grant us every one of our desires and our needs. and everyone about good desires and real needs. And he's also a king who is judging us, and maybe a beneficial king takes care of us, but we need to step up to the plate on ourselves. It's not the same unconditional, maybe, love that the parent has. It's a different relationship. And the answer is God is really both. And balancing those two, knowing that he's our go-to, our parent, that we can ask all these things, we'll go through some of them, you know, at the same time, recognizing that he's a king who judges me for my actions. And somehow we need to be able to balance the two. We have a mitzvah in the Torah to love God, and we have a mitzvah to have fear or awe, or fear and awe and respect for God. And we're, as human beings, we're gifted with the ability to harmonize, to work with both of those at the same time. And what's the first, that's lesson number one. The interesting thing is that the order of Avinu Malkeinu, referring to him first and foremost as the loving parent, conveys the message that that which he does judge us is because he's the loving parent. In other words, to properly embrace the experience of being judged by God, we first need to embrace the experience of being loved by God. We need to know that, just like we discussed in the classes the last few weeks, that the challenges that come our way in life are there as tools to get us to, for us, wants a connection. Therefore, even the very fact that he judges us in life is a function of the fact that he's a loving parent who cares about us in the deepest way and wants us to have the best kind of life, spiritually and morally and ethically as well. And that's why he's judging us. That's why we have Rosh Hashanah. That's why we have Yom Kippur, right? Because as a function of his love, that's why he created the whole universe. Why he created us is out of an act of love, because he wanted to bestow good upon us. That's why he created us. So it's Avinu first. And because he's Avinu, he's Malkeinu. He's our father and he's our king. So let's take a look. And the reason why that's important is because we're going to look at a few of the lines in Avinu Malkeinu and see things that we ask God to do. And when we ask him as Avinu, it's like when your child comes to you and says, or when you went to a parent and said, can you please do this for me? I really, really need it. And if they're able to, they'll do it. Right? So we turn to God, we ask him these whole list of things. But Malkeinu reminds us that at the same time, we need to step up. And what can we do to make each of these things more likely to happen? So every one of the things that we ask, we preface it by saying, you're Avinu, you're Malkeinu. So let's take a quick look. I'm going to share the screen so we can have some of the Avinu Malkeinu in front of us. Okay, so the first one is, let's look at the opening line. The opening line is, our Father, our King, we have sinned before you. Right? In Hebrew, Avinu Malkeinu, as they all start, Chatanu Lofanecha, we have sinned before you. Which I would ask you is a bit of a strange way. I mean, this is not a confessional. We have a lot of confessions in the high holidays, mostly on Yom Kippur and on the days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We don't focus on sin on Rosh Hashanah at all. That's not what the day is about. So while we do have confessions later on, Rosh Hashanah is not the day for that. That comes afterwards. And yet the first line in the Avinu Malkeinu is Chatanu Lefanecha, we have sinned before you. I want to explain why that is. What we're really saying, and why is it the first thing? Why is it there all together? And why is it the first thing? And the answer is, we're going to ask for a good year and for health and wealth and you name it. The list is a beautiful long list of things that we ask God for. But I don't know how many of you saw the videos that I sent out over the last few months. And a number of weeks ago, we had one about where the opening line was the Lexus and the Big Mac. So what do the two of those have? Two certainly very two different things. So what do they have in common? And the answer was that they both used "you deserve" as a marketing tool. You deserve a Lexus and you deserve a break today. And the idea of "you deserve" is a very, very, very non, I would say non-Jewish. It is not a Torah approach to life that we deserve anything. Life is a gift. It's a gift by God. Every aspect of it, everything good we have in it is a gift by God. And the first thing we say is that we're deficient. I'm going to give you this whole big list of things that I want, that I need for this year, for my health, for my family, for my friends, for my community, whatever it is. But I, right up front, I want to make it very, very clear that I know I don't deserve it. I'm turning to you, God, because you're my Avinu, and even though you're my Malkeinu, you're going to judge me, but it's all because you love me. And so I'm turning to you as a parent and as a king, and ask me all these things, but I recognize up front that I am deficient. And in fact, the very last line in the Avinu Malkeinu makes it even more explicit. We start with Chatanu, meaning I'm deficient, I'm lacking. I don't ask, oh, I've done so many good things, God. Why don't you give me a good year and bless me and give me a prognosis and give me money and give me health? I don't deserve it. The last line says it clearly. Our Father, our King, Avinu Malkeinu, be gracious to us and answer us, for we have no meritorious deeds. It's almost like when you go into your boss and you ask for a raise, you say, well, I've done this and I've done that because I do have meritorious deeds. That's why I'm asking you. That has no power by God. What has power by God is the recognition that I don't deserve this. I have no meritorious deeds. Deal charitably and kindly with us and deliver us. That's the approach that Avinu Malkeinu takes. Even though we ask for so many things in the middle, but the very beginning, very end is, I recognize I'm not asking because I deserve it. Right? Which, if I was just going to you as a king, maybe I would have to deserve it. But I'm going to you as Avinu Malkeinu, at the same time that you're a melech, my judging ruler, you're also my loving parent, my loving father in heaven, and that's why I recognize, on the contrary, I have no meritorious deeds, I don't deserve this, and therefore, and that's how I am coming to you. As Avinu Malkeinu, Chatanu, I am deficient. Avinu Malkeinu, Chaneinu, Baneinu, act graciously to me and grant me this. Okay, so that's the next one, the first one. The next one we should look at is, you see right up there on the list, let me go back to it. Got a couple of more over here. And I want to get a drop of feedback from you right now, please, which is, when you look at these, so we say we have no king but you. Okay. We say, let's look at this one here. Our Father, our King, close the mouths of our adversaries and accusers. In fact, the ones before it also, wipe out the oppressor and the adversary, foil the plans of our foes and all the intentions of our enemies. Right? Okay, the mouths of the adversaries and accusers. So when you hear that, what does it sound like? What are we asking God? Somebody tell me. One person, please. When you hear that, our adversaries and our accusers. Somebody? You have to unmute yourself. I'm sorry. You have to unmute yourself. Click unmute.
That would be a plea to Hashem to curb anti-Semitism, to get rid of the anti-Semites who are constantly after us.
I would agree. So you think of, when I hear that line, that's what I hear. I hear, hate websites or things in the media, double standard in the media, or the United Nations 90% of the time, and whatever it is, that's what I hear. And that's true. Thank you, Vern. That's true. But I want to share with you that in Jewish mystical thought, there's a fascinating thought here that very much has to do with this line as well, which is, we're talking about approaching God, and Rosh Hashanah is when we're judged by God. So if you're God and you have to judge, the last thing you need is someone to come tell you, witnesses to come or a prosecutor to make the case. When you think of God as a judge, he can judge all by himself. He's not lacking for any information. Not about what you did, not about what you thought when you did it, what you said, what you thought, what you did. He knows it all. That's what we would assume, that if God judges, he just judges, right? Forgive, whatever it is, but he judges. But the Jewish tradition says, And this is really based on explicit verses in the scriptures, and it's extensive in the Talmudic literature, where it talks about the idea that God set up, I don't know why, I don't think we're capable of knowing why, but he set up a system that when he judges, it goes through a whole, in the heavens, in the spiritual sense, it goes through a courtroom procedure. So there are prosecuting angels who come and bring the case, and there are defending angels who defend you. And the angels battle it out, and God is the judge, and somehow, at the end of the day, based on all that, he judges. He doesn't need it. He's God. He doesn't need anyone to tell him what happened or to present the case or to make it sound how bad it is. He doesn't need any of that. He doesn't need anyone to defend you. He doesn't need all that. But some reason, I don't know why, but he set up the world to work, he set up the universe in such a way that's prosecuting angels, which is interesting because what that means is, you know, if you haven't got a traffic ticket and you went to court to fight it, right? So what's the one thing that you hope? Right? You hope the prosecutor doesn't, the police officer doesn't show up. The police officer doesn't show up, so the case is thrown out because there's no one there to prosecute the case. They can't prosecute the case without the testimony of the police officer. Okay, that's how it used to be. I don't know if it's true anymore. Thank God I haven't gotten a driving ticket in a while. That what used to be. Everybody became religious when they had to go to the court because, you know, if the guy doesn't show up, you just pray. He shouldn't come. Right? So that's when we ask God to close the mouths of adversaries and accusers, right? As Avinu, as our Father, loving Father in heaven, we're asking him to don't listen to those prosecuting angels. Stop them. But again, the Malkeinu means he judges us. So what we have to understand is what can we do while we're praying and saying this? What we need to be thinking about is, yes, God, I'm throwing myself on your mercy because you're my Father and you're benevolent and you love me. And therefore, just shut them up. Don't listen to them. But what can I do to help make that happen? And that's from the Malkeinu perspective, from the judging perspective, that I need to earn this. I need to step up to the plate. So there's two fascinating teachings. There's many teachings. There's two fascinating teachings in the Talmud about this. What can we do to stop the prosecuting angels? And so the rabbis of the Talmud say that God judges us measure for measure. In other words, when we judge others, we're really empowering how God is going to judge us. So the first thing they say is, if this is an amazing teaching, the Chafetz Chaim, the great Chafetz Chaim, who wrote so much about the importance of guarding our tongue and being careful what you say, he writes this. He says that a person is truly, and it's hard, it's difficult, but be truly careful not to speak negatively about others. What you earn in return is that in heaven, the prosecuting angels can speak negatively about you. It's unbelievable teaching. It means I may do things wrong and I deserve to be judged for it. But if I am careful not to speak negatively about others, then in heaven, they can, it's like the police officer doesn't show up. The prosecutor is missing in action and that's it. The case is thrown out. The second thing he says is, the rabbis of the Talmud would say is, that, you know, a lot of situations come up where we make a judgment about people. Someone did something to me, did something, whatever, and whether I should or not, I judge it. You know, what did they just do? What did I just see? Did he just do that? Did he just do that? Right? So there's a mitzvah to judge favorably. But not everything's black and white, and often it's very much not black and white, and what you think you saw is not necessarily what you saw. And if we could train ourselves to judge, give the benefit of the doubt, what goes around comes around. And that's how we're looked at from heaven. So these are two powerful, powerful tools to take this plea to our Father in heaven of, you know, close the mouths of our adversaries and our accusers, right? And to step up to see what can we do to help facilitate that from our end to make sure that will happen. And that's those two ideas. Okay, I want to getting down on time, so I want to go to the look at one more over here. This is a wonderful prayer that we're going to look at right now, which is I didn't mark it, where we ask God to open the gates of heaven to our prayers.
There it is.
Tell me where to stop. I don't see it. I missed it.
There you go. One more.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. Open the gates of heavens to our prayer. Now, that's important because I need to have God's attention, right? You know, the Talmud tells us that sometimes, for whatever reason, the gates of heaven are closed to prayer. You go to put in your petition and the gates of heaven are closed, that prayers can't go through. A very frightening thought. In fact, there's a Talmudic teaching that says in general, since the destruction of the temple, it may not be an absolute statement, but certainly to a great degree, it says that the gates of heaven are closed after the destruction of the temple. So what does that mean? What about prayers? But there's an amazing statement. The Talmud says that even if the gates even when the gates of prayer are closed, the Sha'arei Dim'a, the gates of tears, heartfelt tears, are never closed. As God might not be inclined for some reason to hear my prayer, but when it's a heartfelt prayer coming with tears, genuine tears, not crocodile tears, real tears, they're not always so easy to be so thoughtful and so in touch with our prayers, what's going on. I mean, God forbid someone in the family is very, very sick and someone believes in God and knows that it's all in God's hands at the end of the day and they're doing everything they can with the laws of nature to see what they could do down here, but they recognize it's in God's hands, which is how we're supposed to approach it, and they pour out their heart in prayer, then maybe it's a little bit easier to cry, right? But it's difficult sometimes, it's challenging, but that is, the Talmud says, that heartfelt prayers that come with genuine tears give power, make the prayer more effective. Now, not always praying for someone who's sick or for a physical being. You know, there's a lot of growth and change of bad habits or getting to a better place spiritually, morally, ethically. That if we're introspective, there's a lot of growth we want to do on Rosh Hashanah. That's what Rosh Hashanah is really about. It's about being introspective and growing. Right? And so we ask for God. We spoke about this in the Amida study, how we ask for God to help us come back to you as well. Right? Now, again, if we really, really feel deep down, then we not only pray, but we realize how desperate, how important it is. And so we pray with tears. We pray when it's really sincere prayer with tears. That would be very effective. Right? Sometimes we're not at that place. And I always think of this story. You may have heard the story. It's a wonderful story. In 1967, when the Israeli army, with God's blessing, the Israeli army recaptured the city of Jerusalem and the temple and the Kotel, the Western Wall. Right? So there was a group of religious soldiers who were there, the first ones on the scene there, and they were crying. It was an unbelievable moment after all these years to get the Western Wall back, the last remnant of ancient Jerusalem and the temple, to get it back, and they were crying. And there was one soldier from a left-wing, irreligious kibbutz who was there, no connection to the religion whatsoever, and he's crying. And so one of his friends asked him, he says, what are you crying about? He says, you don't believe in the whole thing. And he answered very, very famously. He said, "Ani boche al shani lo boche. I'm crying that I don't know what there is to cry about. I see all these people who are so inspired and so connected that they're crying because of this moment, and I'm crying because I don't know what there is to cry about." They recognize that. And that's also a level of crying. Sometimes we approach God and we say, I'm not at that place. I'd like to grow. I'd like to change. I'd like to improve in certain areas of my conduct. Between man and God, between man and man, whatever it is, every one of us knows areas that we can improve in. Right? And so I stand before God, and if I really feel it, if I've internalized how important that change is, then I'll be crying as if someone in my family is desperately ill, and I'd be crying to God. Right? But if I don't realize it, I say, God, I want to be there. I don't have the understanding or the discipline or the whatever determination to prioritize these things in my life, but I would want to prioritize them. I'm crying that I don't know what there is to cry about. I realize I'm missing something and I'm not there yet either. That's also a very effective prayer. The idea that I'm crying because I don't know what I'm crying about is a very effective prayer. But again, each one of these things, I think the goal is, as you look through the Avinu Malkeinu, and we say the Avinu Malkeinu, I think the goal is, again, to, I guess, in review, I'll just spend the next 2 minutes just reviewing some of the points that cover a lot of different things. But number one, the idea of balancing the idea of Avinu and Malkeinu, the love of God and the awe and the fear of God, the God as the parent, God as the judge, balancing the two of them. And therefore, every plea that we make, we, on one hand, make it recognizing that calling on God as a loving parent to help me with unconditional love, and at the same time recognizing that I need to see how I can improve to earn that because he's also judging me. But I know that he's judging me because of love. He's given me the opportunity to have a meaningful life. If I wouldn't be judged, it means whatever I do doesn't make a difference. That's not a meaningful life. So it was an act of love that he created us, gave us a standard and holds us to the standard. But he's also, at the end of the day, the loving parent. So balancing those two is a big part of what it's about. And so we approach all the prayers, throwing ourselves on his mercy as a parent, but also stepping up to the plate. What can I do to help facilitate this? We talk about asking God to silence those who speak badly about us. As Vern said, very, very much, that's very, very current events down here on earth. But it's also eternally the picture of the prosecution in heaven that goes on, the way that we live our lives or deficiencies in living our lives, that to silence the prosecuting angels, to give me a chance to improve and not let them just speak so negatively about me and to have you judge me in that way. And again, the things that we could do to help facilitate that are things like being careful about not judging others, being careful not to speak negatively about others. Those things come back to help us. They bounce back measure for measure to help us. We talk about asking God to open the heavens to our prayers. And that is and to the degree that we can help open the heavens with sincerity in our prayers, not just going through the routine, and with tears, literal tears, very, very, very effective. And to the degree that we're not feeling it, to be able to feel that how much we really would want to be doing it. And I hope that these are all lessons, take-home lessons. Again, it's been a different kind of year, and for many of us, it's going to be a different kind of Rosh Hashanah. And wherever we end up, there's many wonderful prayers that we say on Rosh Hashanah. It's a wonderful opportunity of connection to God and for introspection and for growth. And hopefully some of these lessons are lessons that we could utilize in that process. So that's it. If anybody has any questions or comments right now, I'd love to hear. And or email afterwards, I'd love to be in touch about them.